Devices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try this at home.
Goddamn, I'm glad y'all set it off. Used to be hard, now you're just wet and soft. First you was down with the AK. And now I see you on a video with Mitch and Lay, looking like straight bozos. I saw it coming, that's why I went solo. And kept on stomping. While y'all motherfuckers moved straight out of Compton.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me as always, Skip Hill and S2H. Gentlemen, how is it going? I just got back from the Arnold Classic at like 2 o'clock in the morning, so forgive me if my voice is not up to par. Guys, what's up, Skip? How you been?
Everything that I did over the weekend will pale in comparison to the carnival that you witnessed.
Carnival's a good word, man.
Yeah, Carnival's we should probably just go to you. Yeah, nothing eventful here. Nothing. Everything's boring here. I moved in. I got unpacked. I'm in my new apartment as I look around and see nothing. After I left a beautiful house in Colorado, I have no regrets, but sometimes you think, but then I go outside and I'm like, this is why I'm here.
It was worth it for sure. Yep. Yeah. I'm vicariously living through you because I would, I'd kind of like to move away from Michigan, and I feel like Florida would be, it's like the bodybuilding hotspot, first of all. But yeah, man, that weather is, that'd be great.
Yeah, I didn't know that when I moved here. I mean, I knew it was warm and I knew people went to the beach, but I was actually quite surprised at how many people that I was acquainted with, you know, online and through bodybuilding that are down here in South Florida. Okay. So that's been kind of cool. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of free burgers out of this deal. It's freaking awesome.
If you would have known there were that many bodybuilders, you probably just wouldn't have moved. You probably
I just stayed in Colorado.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because at 9,000 feet in Colorado, there's just me and like other redneck white people. That's it.
Yeah, no kidding. So, but yeah, it was a good time. Arnold Classic was, there was obviously, it was nonstop, man, from Wednesday night when I got there all the way till Sunday night when I left. And I got to see a lot of cool people, got to meet some people that I've talked to, you know, on the shows that I hadn't had a chance to actually meet in person before, and met some new people too. So I think that I've got a few cool ideas for future shows and, you know, various episodes, possibly a new program, plus I'm talking to Matt, the owner of Powerhouse in downtown Columbus. He wants me to do a podcast, or I'm thinking video, from the gym next year, which could be a lot of fun.
Nice. I'm going to go next year. I'm going to go to the Arnold. I've never been. I've never been to the Olympia.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. So let's just, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to plan on it and we'll have to plan to get, I need to get to the Elite FTS compound. I've been with Elite FTS for 5 years and have not been there, have not personally met, you know, Dave or any of those people. And I think when you went this year, it just kind of got me thinking. I wouldn't have been able to go this year anyway because of the move and everything. Right. But I think I'm gonna go. I think I'm going to, deal with the weather up there in Ohio. Matter of fact, how bad was it?
There were a couple of moments where I felt like I don't know if I can make it to the expo with how cold this is right now. But I can't. It's too late to turn around, and there's no building I can go huddle in. I might die right here. That might happen. And then I look over and there's a guy in like a stringer just walking next to me, you know?
Well, I mean, it's bodybuilding. Give me a break.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if you loan me a flannel, I'll wear some work boots. I'll have a rubber coat in. I'll fit in just fine.
Yeah. There were other times though that it was warm. We had a couple of nice days. So the weather was actually decent. All the snow had melted. Weather was not bad for the Midwest in, you know, February, March.
So. Yeah, not bad for Ohio.
Right.
In March.
Right. I don't know how people manage to do it. If you stay at the Hilton, you don't have to worry about it. You just walk directly out of the building into the expo.
That's where I'm staying. You just help me right there.
I think it's the Hyatt. I think the athletes stay at the Hilton. That's across the street. But yeah, the Hyatt, they have like, you just literally walk out through the lobby and you are in the expo hall. So the only thing is then you really can't get away from it all. You know what I mean? You're in there for so long, and you get inundated, you know, and you need a break. One of the nice things that I've liked when I've stayed out of town is that when you do drive just 15 minutes away from town, then you're back into like normal people world. You know, you can go to Whole Foods and it's just chill, and it's other, you know, it's your average Whole Foods crowd, which, not that I necessarily like all of them, but you could get some food there and not have to wait in a long line to do it. It's relaxed, and I like that downtime. So I don't know, but I think I'm with you. I think I might stay at the Hyatt next year. If we book now, we're guaranteed a room. If we wait, which we probably will, then you don't get one. They sell out.
What do they fill that quickly?
Well, I figure now is a good time, right? I guarantee you get a room at this point, but I know
that. You mean like 3 months?
Yeah. Yeah, 3 months. 3 months. If you did it 3 months out, you might be able to get a room still. Nah, maybe not even. I remember around Christmas time, I had checked, and they were out.
Oh, I mean 3 months from now.
Oh, yeah, there we go. And hell, if you can't make it, then you can cancel, right?
There you go. I'll make it, though. I mean, if I commit to it, I can deal. Look, I haven't been – the only pro show that I've ever been to was the Colorado Pro-Am in 2007. And it was the first pro show, I believe – that Phil Heath did. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's the reason I was there. I had two clients in the show, but I stayed for the pro part because Phil was competing. And I think if it wasn't his first pro show, it was the first pro show that I was going to see him compete. And I figured I had an opportunity while I was here. It was one or the other. I can't remember. You guys don't know if that was his first pro show, do you?
I can't remember offhand. Scott?
The Sean Ray Pro-Am.
No. We got you, Scott.
Scott's on break.
Oh.
Look, we've been on for 10 minutes, and it's break time.
Break time.
Yeah. Well, union. I just want to know why Skip gets to go first every time.
He doesn't, but Skip's got the high energy.
And you're going to be that, and I'm paid more.
My manager is going to be giving you a call.
On the contracts, it goes Scott McNally, Skip, and then down like number 7 is Scott from Texas.
Ooh. Well, that's not true.
The guy that had to tell you the difference between injectable and Tab Winstrol one time. But that's a whole other story. We won't get into that one.
Listen, I'm not here for my knowledge or for information. I'm here for entertainment purposes only, and because I'm pretty, exactly.
Well, actually, I was checking something online anyway, because I heard from somebody in your area that you were meeting people at public restrooms or something, so, with your shirt off.
Online, that was a. Now, we talked about this before you hit the button. That is bullshit. Someone saw me on my bike. Apparently, I stood out because I'm sexy as fuck, and they noticed my tan. Well, okay, they probably noticed my bike. In what, South Beach? So don't give me public restroom bullshit.
Well, they did. The guy said he looks like Bruce Willis.
Are you serious or are you kidding?
No, I'm in his current condition, yeah.
That just means that I'm old and untrained. That's awesome. At least he didn't take a picture and post it and went, Skip's really not in that great of shape.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you ride a bike, you're kind of folded over, so things happen.
Titties flapping in the wind.
But you'll like it, Skip. Yeah, you'll like the show because there's a lot of high quality bodybuilding there. Obviously, the pro show is a lot of fun, but there's a lot of good amateur stuff there too. So, yeah, I'll look forward to it. And we had a really cool meetup. A lot of people showed up for, and it'd be cool to have you stop by. You know, like we did that at the Best Bar Ever booth, and it was a lot of fun. Scott, you said you were gonna come down, right? Or you were gonna try, but you weren't able to make it, huh?
No, I checked the weather report and it was below 60, so I just decided that was too cold for me. But no, I mean, I was contemplating it. There was a possibility, but had some things come up. So, you know, I don't really like the state of Ohio anyway. I've had some not so great times there. no knocking everybody in Ohio, but it's been not the most. Not the best experiences I've had there, let's just say.
Okay. We'll just mysteriously let that one go.
I won't. I'll tell you, Ohio, I hope I don't offend anybody, but the reality is the cities I've been to in Ohio, they're rough. Cleveland, rough. Yeah. Toledo. Fucking A rough.
Oh, yeah.
Cincinnati, shit. The only thing good in Cincinnati, no offense, is the Reds. American, I think it's American part. What the hell is it called? All American part.
I just know the Belmont County Jail. That's the only thing I know.
I thought that's what, yeah, I think I remember hearing that one.
Most before. Of your stories are related to jail or crimes.
Right?
I don't know if you've noticed that, but I have.
Well, at least I'm right around my shirt off.
Every show needs that token criminal. We have a token black guy. We have a token criminal. And then we've got Scott running the show.
That's the way I try to keep things. I like that. That's my it's my platform. That's what I work from.
But honestly, I really don't like crowds very well. So I think the last show I went to, a pro show, was Europa in Dallas. Which
I think there's not a lot of people there, so that makes sense.
I mean, it was.
I'm kidding.
Crowds. I don't like it all bunched in and jammed up and.
Crowds or people? I just don't like. I'm old. I don't like people in general.
Well, that would coincide. They're both the same. Crowds and people. Yeah. I might go one year if I have like a big suit I can wear around me. It gives me like my space.
Here's the bitch. If we all went, especially you and I, Scott, because we complain about people because, you know, we're old and that's what old people do, we really would, and I know I will. I'll have a good time. We'd probably have a blast. And then we would wonder why we didn't go before.
I know it. You guys would both have a good time. It'd be a lot of fun.
We could hold hands.
Could. Do I have to wear a shirt?
No, but I'll be wearing earplugs. I can tell you that.
So, Scott, what's new with you, man? What's been going on?
Same old, same old. It's like 80 degrees today.
Nice.
It's humid as hell. Actually, I was at the car dealership this morning. But I'm trying to buy my son a car. So, it's like a game you have to play with him.
Yeah, I'm not into that game. I know some people enjoy it, and they enjoy trying to like get the price where they want it. And I just want the car, you know. But I respect that, though. You know, you could save a lot of money that way too, and end up with a good vehicle, especially if you're looking for like a newer used car. You know, that type of thing.
Well, is
there any other version of newer used?
What I said, newer used. Yeah.
Oh, newer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know how to play the game, so I'm good at it. So I enjoy it, you know.
Well, then I'll be ringing you up in a couple months because I've been shopping too, and I have no clue what I'm doing. Yeah. Not that I haven't bought vehicles before, but I'm like you, Scott. I don't give a shit. I know what I want. I pretend for like 2 minutes that I'm not going to pay. Yeah. And then I'm like, I'm just going to fucking pay. And they know I'm going to pay because that's what they do for a living.
Right. We'll just wait we'll wait him out for 2 minutes.
Yeah, we'll give him 2 or 3 minutes. He'll put a rubber coat in. He'll come around.
Yeah. Well, you get the best deals if you don't fall in love with a car. If you have the ability to walk out, that's where you get the best deals.
Well, I'm not gonna because I'm gonna build one. I'm not even shopping off the floor.
Now you remember this car's not for me, so the deal's really got to be a good one.
That's true. Yeah. So, why are you buying one from a dealership? Why don't you just buy one privately?
Because I want to get the warranty.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Right there.
The actual dealer warranty.
Right there, Skip. Good move, right? That's what we can learn from.
Remember this. Anybody that buys a car, if you buy a used car and they say it's not certified, they're full of crap. And whatever the warranty, they'll give you some bullshit number that's like $2,000. It doesn't matter. They're going to make all their money back through whatever manufacturer the car is when you do bring it in for service. So you should get the warranty for free.
Hmm. No kidding.
Be no extra cost. Yeah, I had one priced out Saturday with that thrown in there, and it was at 8:30 at night, which is a good time. On Saturday, 8:30 at night is a good time to buy a car because they want to go to the bar. They want to go home. They don't want you around.
I heard after lunch.
No, Saturday late on Saturday is the best. And nice. So I go in there this morning, and I go in there this morning, and somebody had sold the car.
We sold it late Saturday.
Excellent. They got another one. I'm just making them get right on it. This is my second walkout in the same dealership.
Mm. Yeah, see, that takes way too much time and effort.
Right.
I'll pretend I'm going to walk out, and then they just wait, and I turn around and go, okay, you knew I wasn't going to leave.
There's a lot of other things. You know, you got to know what the manufacturer to dealer cash incentives are, because you'll never see that. There's some cars that have massive cash incentives from manufacturer to dealer. Hmm. You know, stuff like that. But, you know,
I'll be calling you.
So before we started the show, you know, we were BSing off air as usual, and we got into a discussion about the importance of IGF and muscle growth. Scott, I still didn't quite understand what you're saying, but we kind of hit the pause button on that conversation. I wanted to kind of revisit it while we were actually recording, and I'm sure that, you know, it won't be the same conversation we had before, but it's going to benefit me, because I think I need to hear this again in order to totally understand this. So this is in part in reference to, you know, we were talking about what Dr. Scott had said, both, you know, in part at the seminar that he had with John Meadows. And he was talking about this on Muscle Minds last week as well. He was talking about how steroids that don't bind strongly to the androgen receptor may still have a strong effect through some other outlet, some other method outside of that binding. You know, because we get a lot of questions from guys who say, hey, if tren is the strongest binding steroid, then why don't we just use as much tren as possible and leave the test out? You know, we hear questions like that. In the real world, you guys and I, we all know that that's not necessarily going to be the best option for your cycle. But to explain that is a whole other thing. You know, we were getting into conversation, though, about the importance of the androgen receptor and its binding to steroids. Now, Scott, how did IGF tie into this, first of all?
Okay, so I'll explain it in not Scott Stevenson terms, because they're too big of words for me and everybody probably. So you have a satellite cell above the receptor. Just imagine, I'm taking my hand and doing it. Imagine you have two saucers. One's the satellite cells, one is the androgen receptors. So they're, when you have exogenous, you know, anabolic androgenic steroids, they go through the bloodstream and they are first, opposite, the satellite cell is the welcome mat, the doormat. So they go to the satellite cell, and the satellite cell dictates how they're distributed to the androgen receptors. So, and also on that part, you have to have enough blood proteins to transfer anything in your blood. So if your blood proteins are not that high, then not as much is going to get shuttled through the system. Well, what happens is, and the one reason why people will say, well, you know, tren's a stronger drug than testosterone cypionate, but you get better results in muscle growth out of testosterone cypionate, because testosterone cypionate aromatizes, and the actual aromatase process releases IGF from the liver. So when IGF comes in, IGF does not go to the satellite cell. It goes directly to the androgen receptor. So that would be why, on paper, tren looks stronger, but why testosterone works better for building muscle, because it's causing an IGF release from the liver along with its androgenic anabolic properties going to the satellite cell. So the ultimate goal, you can either do exogenously raise your IGF levels through growth or IGF-1, et cetera, and then use exogenous AAS, or just use an aromatizing steroid like testosterone. And that's and then, you know, there's other factors in it too, though, because you have to break the muscle down in training. So when you break the muscle down in training, the IGF accelerates the repair, which accelerates the growth of muscle and androgen receptors. So it all ties in together.
Well, I think it's important to note too, you have, you know, when you say you can take an aromatizing compound, you also don't want to kill your estrogen. Mm.
No, it's the same process. Time. It's the process of aromatase.
So it's not the actual, say, amount of estrogen. I call it a kickback.
Well, no, you're correct. I mean, depending on what AI you use, you can negate some of that. Negate, you know, there's a, you know, that's why where you check your labs and you make sure, okay, I'm keeping it at my estrogen at a certain point. But you want you need some aromatase. You want some aromatase. You don't want to pound it down because that aromatase process releases IGF from the liver. Now, exogenous ways to raise your IGF will even be more effective than just using a aromatizing compound.
Hmm. So we're talking GH, IGF, secretagogues.
Incrolex, GH, those are probably the two best ones.
All right. What do you think about the secretagogues, though? It sounds like, obviously, and I'm right there with you, you don't think that they're going to be as beneficial. Do you think there's any place for those things?
Yeah. You know, I think that, let me phrase this the right way. I think if there's some benefit to it, but what are you getting? That's what I would say. You know, what kind of purity,
what are you getting as far as the actual product?
I think that's where there's some challenges in that area.
Yeah.
So, you know, if purity is a big deal, and if you don't have a good pure product that's been stable temperature wise, not gotten bounced up and down in the air, you know, all that good stuff, there's some validity to it, but it's kind of like you're building a house and you bring a hammer instead of an electric drill, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know. I think you're just better off going with the HGH or the Incrolex line.
I'm with you. I totally think the same thing. I've seen small bits out of the secretagogues, but I just honestly, man, in a lot of that stuff, it's like for the price, you could just get growth. So
hypothetically, yes, you could.
Yeah, hypothetically, it's all we ever speak here. Hypothetically,
I mean, really, if you're on HRT and you have a prescription, you know, genotropins, serostims, whatever.
Yeah.
There's really nothing you need to do above that.
Mm. No. So, you know, I'm speaking of which, with my humotropes, it comes with its own liquid to reconstitute it. Okay. I'm used to using backwater, bacteriostatic water, for the generics I've used in the past. This water is something different. It smells like the same way the insulin smells.
It's a sodium chloride.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
I've used sodium chloride before that didn't smell like this. This smells like Band-Aids. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, they probably put a preservative in it.
Okay, that must be what it is the preservative.
So I hear.
All right. All right, guys. Well, we have a good handful of questions here that we can get to. And I actually had one of my own. So if you guys are ready to head off to commercial break when we come back, I want to be selfish and start out with mine.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Awesome. We'll see you in a second.
If you've enjoyed S2H's contribution to Blood, Sweat, and Gear and would like to learn more, reach out to his team at advancedtrainingtech.com. No matter what your goals are, if you're heading to the pro stage or just want to recomp, feel free to register at advancedtrainingtech.com. Team S2H will be available to educate and inform members as to what plans would best fit their needs, or just hang out and interact at the forums free of charge. That's advancedtrainingtech.com. Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated. Rebel on! Now the town, the town is now. Sing my- Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
I am a nightmare walking, psychopath talking, king of my jungle, just a gangster stalking, living life like a firecracker, quick as my fuse, been dead as a
All right, guys, and we are back, S2H, Skip Hill, and myself, Scott McNally, here with Blood, Sweat, and Gear. So here's my selfish moment of the day. Like I said, this is my own question, and this is related to this past weekend. I'm going to tell you, Skip, when you do come to the Arnold next year, don't plan on getting a ton of great training in if you plan on going to shows and you plan on walking around the expo and stuff. Like, it takes a lot out of you, you know, and you're traveling, so your nutrition probably isn't going to be perfect. Man, it was tough. It was really tough to get a good workout in there. I'm sure you can relate, you know, traveling back and forth from Colorado to Florida lately.
Yeah, it's rough. Even when I go out of town, I used to travel a lot more than I do now, but I would go out of town to stay and train clients.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes for a couple of days, sometimes up to a week. I think it's easier to stay longer than it is shorter. If it's a couple of days, it's almost like when you find your rhythm, you have to turn around and come back home. So I'm with you there. You know, on short turnarounds like that, if we were at the Arnold for only a few days, I probably wouldn't even bother with it.
But that's the thing, though, like, you're at the Arnold, I'm at the Arnold, I'm going to be like, Skip, let's go do something. You know what I mean? It's hard. Well, it's hard not to. So,
yeah.
Plus, you'll be at the compound.
Exactly. That was my point. That's kind of a tough call there, because I would want to get to the compound, and I can't show up to the compound and, you know, train like, traps. I was going to say a girl, but there are girls who out-train me. So, right. Yeah, and I don't think it would be terribly busy unless it was busy with, you know, power lifters and guys moving tonnage, which would suck even more than being around a bunch of narcissistic bodybuilders, because, you know, while I'm over there laying down doing chest flies,
right,
and someone's 20s. Doing exactly. Yeah, I'm going to be mocked, I'm pretty sure, things like that. So, and, you know, plus all the talking and stuff that you're going to do in the gyms close to the venue, I would imagine that, you know, you're just going to bump into people. And, you know, you want to say hi or introduce yourself or, you know, the other way where someone wants to say hi too. So it does. It has to be a little rough.
Yeah. I mean, I got two workouts in, and the first workout I was totally exhausted and tried to train back. I couldn't hardly get a pump. I got one for like 5 minutes, and then I was dead after that. But yesterday, we managed to train some legs at the Powerhouse downtown. That's the gym where everybody goes, because it's in walking distance of the convention center. And there were a lot of big name bodybuilders that were training there, even though it was Sunday night. And even though a lot of people had gone home, there was still a good deal of people there. So anyway, we ended up, like I said, training legs, and I felt like the workout was pretty good. My plan was to move a little faster and, you know, rely on higher reps versus heavier weight, since we spent several days, you know, traveling and eating off plan. Hydration probably wasn't right. But through the end of it, we ended up getting a killer workout in. We ended up pushing some pretty decently heavy weight on the leg press. My legs were fried like halfway through. We kept pushing, did a Widowmaker at the end. I took it to, you know, basically as far as I could go. Yet I woke up today and my legs are not sore at all. Not even remotely sore.
They will be tomorrow.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Maybe. I don't know. But I've had that happen before where they aren't sore. You know, if they don't get sore, so let's just theoretically say they don't. Can you still get a good workout in without feeling delayed onset muscle soreness? How much of delayed onset muscle soreness is a indicator of how good your workout was? Do you need it, or because I think like we all feel that in the beginning, and then it begins to go away, and then I get it to various levels, you know, week to week. Sometimes I think part of that is just because my recovery is better than other times.
Right.
How much do you gauge the quality of your workout as somebody who's now a seasoned bodybuilder? You guys have been doing this for years, you know, compared to, you know, back in the day when you just would annihilate a muscle and be sore constantly.
I don't know. I think that the recovery is the issue. As an example, I think that the better my recovery is, and the more, maybe not the more frequently I train, but the more consistently I train, the workouts, in my opinion, aren't related or as far as whether they were productive or not to the soreness. Here's an example. You know, if I'm training straight, I'm in prep now, I'm not going to take a break, I'm not going to take a few days off unless it's absolutely necessary. If I get 6 to 8 weeks in, I'm not going to be very sore. I might be a little bit if I, you know, contract the muscle and I can kind of feel it, but I'm not going to walk around or get up out of bed and have my legs be sore and be like, oh my God, I can't sit on the toilet. So if soreness is related to whether the workouts are productive or they're more productive, then that would mean that the workouts coming back off of, say, a week off of not training would be more productive than 4 weeks later. I say it's a recovery issue. I think the better you recover, you're just not going to be as sore.
Okay.
So I think it's hard because psychologically, even though I don't agree that soreness equates to whether the workout was productive or not, or great versus good versus bad, it's difficult to get away from that psychological component. There's just something satisfying about, man, I killed it. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be sore, but most people, and I've had conversations with a lot of top trainers and stuff like that on this topic over the years, people tend to say that your better body parts are the muscle groups that don't get as sore.
Hmm.
Do you guys find that as well?
That's interesting. Hmm.
Don't that kind of makes sense.
I mean, it has for me, but I would ask you, you know, you guys, if you have noticed the same thing. Most people do.
Scott was talking about this on Muscle Minds, the previous episode. What's an example of when your muscle groups skip that don't get as sore but seem to be genetically, you know, better than other muscle groups on your body?
Well, I don't really have genetically good muscle groups. but as an example, I mean, if I have to pick one, you know, I did work my ass off for years to go from no calves to pretty good calves.
Okay.
And I mean, I can train my calves with drop sets, rest pause, everything else. They'll be mildly sore when I contract them for 6-8 hours. And when I say mildly, like I wouldn't even notice it if I didn't sit there and consciously flex them and contract them to see if there's any soreness.
I see. We actually have a question a little bit later that relates to calf training, so we'll have to come back to that one. But
all right,
interesting. How about you, Scott? What do you think about this? Do you have any?
That's an interesting point Skip brought up. I never thought about it, but and I'll phrase this because I've taken breaks in training and stuff. But if I'm training consistently over time, let's just say a year straight, my chest is always really sore.
Mm.
After doing chest, no okay. matter, I'm going to say to every body part the same kind of intensity. Chest, hamstrings, hamstring, glute area, triceps is some a little bit, and then my back to an extent. But my delts never get sore.
Hmm.
I could sit there and fry them forever. Calves, about like what Skip said, man, I could cook them, but they're a little bit, you know, quads. Never get sore.
Never.
But also, I also have an issue with my quads because I used to put DMSO on them a lot years ago, and so they're kind of numb a little bit. my chest, it's I mean like the hurt to the touch sore, but if I can smoke delts and nothing.
Okay, and then how does your chest develop compared to your shoulders?
I would say my shoulders are were my best body part. Plus, I was also I used to bench a lot when I competed. So I was probably a front delt more presser.
Right.
Traps don't get sore either.
No.
No.
That's funny. My quads get fried. My traps get fried too.
But I mean, I'm the have trouble sit on the toilet guy after leg day. But yeah, chest, hamstrings, especially through there is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Interesting. They said that, cause I didn't think about that, but yeah, it's weird, cause it doesn't really, it's not indicative of the training or any kind of different kind of intensity or anything. It's just, I don't know. Some things get sore. Like in my back, if I get sore, it's going to be like my outer lats and nothing towards the middle.
Now that's it. Okay. So, you know, while I was on Muscle Minds with Scott and we were talking about this, I thought about it, and yeah, my shoulders don't get very sore, but my shoulders have developed very well. And I said that on the show. Now, something I didn't think about was the opposite. My back will get so sore. Every ounce of my back tissue will be just like fried after a hard back workout. But back is also something I've had a harder time growing.
Which I think comes back to recovery. I mean, I've thought the same thing with my legs these days versus 10, 15 years ago. My legs were certainly better before I had all my back issues. And even though they weren't great, they still stood out as a relatively one of my better muscle groups. These days, I mean, they'll just be so sore, like Scott is saying, you know, either sitting down on the toilet or even just getting up off the couch. You know, I want to old guy it and push off my knees to get up. And then, you know, you kind of waddle like a penguin for a few steps and then you start walking.
Right.
And I think that's a recovery issue. I'm on a training schedule right now where I train more frequently. Yeah. And sometimes when I come back around to legs, I know they're not ready to go.
How do you handle that?
And yet, honestly, right now, because it's the beginning of prep, I handle it like any other meathead bodybuilder. I just push through.
Of course you do.
Yeah, because one of two things will happen at that point. Either my recovery will get better, or it'll just go in the fucking shitter. And because I'm not doing cardio right now yet, I feel like, and I'm banking on, that my recovery is going to get better.
Interesting. I could see that then. I could see that with a little bit more time. You know, speaking of which, how's the diet going so far?
It's going good. I had cornflakes and poured Anadrol over them this morning.
Nice.
Washed it down with a little more Anadrol. No. It is. It's going well. But it's only been a little over a week. I'm not going to load for a few weeks. And it's funny because I'm freaking people out around me. I'm getting all the comments of, oh, my God, you're just so dedicated. I could never do that. I'm like, well, you're not a bodybuilder. No offense. But, yeah. You know, I love my burgers and I love my breakfast, but I don't do that. I don't eat those things from a lack of discipline.
Right.
I eat those things because I can, because I'm in the off season and I can stay lean doing that once a week with loading. Yeah. Right now, I just want to get myself to the point where I'm depleted. And it's catching up. I mean, I'm training through the weekends, which I don't usually do. I'm going to do that for a few weeks to just get into depleted mode. And, you know, I am running keto. So I'm already to the point after about only a week and a half that the pump is hard to come by, the weights are very heavy, and I'm in that phase, that transition phase, where, and I think it'll be by the end of this week, where the pumps will start to come back, my recovery will increase and become more optimal, and I will feel better by this time next week without probably much issue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey Scott, back on your back, getting sore. Try this. So if you do back one day and it's like super sore the next day and you go to the gym, go do like some really light lat pull downs with a full stretch for like 75 reps.
Yeah.
You know, like two plates or something and just pump some blood in there.
Just really, just filling them up and kind of flushing out the lactic acid maybe.
Just pump some blood in there. Something that's like ridiculously light, something you wouldn't hardly even warm up with, you know, half of that.
Okay.
Now, let me take that lactic acid, because I agree with you, Scott. I completely agree with you. Yeah, the soreness is not lactic acid related.
What is it?
I know. And here's the thing. I'm not knocking you for saying that. And I certainly don't want to make it sound like, oh, let me jump on Scott. because yeah, I no, thought that I don't years know. And years and years too. Yeah, it was kind of one of those old bodybuilding isms that was just accepted, and I accepted it as well. But only recently have they shown that the soreness has nothing to do, apparently, with lactic acid. It is simply just the micro tears in the muscle itself. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, but lactic acid is
long gone by then.
I know what Scott's talking about. I know I've done that before. Where you know what? Here's an example. I've had sore legs, and then I've ridden a bike for 15, 20 minutes the next day or a day late. I'll have sore legs for like 3 days straight, and it feels like it's not going anywhere. Then I'll ride a bike for 20 minutes, pump my legs up, and then from there the soreness dissipates quickly. What's the activity?
So blood's going in and helping repair.
I see. Speeding up recovery with better blood flow.
Everything shuttles through your blood.
Mm, interesting.
What about even warmth and that sort of thing? Because I know, you know, and I'm guessing here, I'm taking a stab, but
I see where you're
agree with you.
I see where you're blood, going.
Yeah. I think sometimes this may even be related to more frequent training as well. You know, as an example, if my legs are sore and I go in to train them and I walk into the gym going, I'm screwed. Like, this is going to suck, but yeah. I need to make the best of it. And then I end up having this killer leg workout. Once I'm into the workout, I don't even feel that I was sore like I was an hour before when I walked into the gym. And I'm not talking about crippled sore, but I'm saying lingering soreness. And then it's gone within 15 minutes of starting legs. Mm. So I'm wondering the same thing. You know, it could be the blood flow is increasing, you know, delivery of nutrients and stuff like that for repair, but it can't do that in 15 minutes. You know what I mean? So what is that? I mean, I wouldn't think that it would. So I wonder if the temperature is an issue or if there's something else that is being, you know, removed from the muscle with that blood flow. You know, obviously not lactic acid, I guess, based on.
Well, anything you heat up is going to draw blood. So let's say your back's sore or it was bothering you. And I'll give you an example. Playing golf, back starts bothering me. I'll get on a tee box when it's sunny out and hot and lay flat on my back. And it gets hot and it feels better because it's pushing blood. It's drawing blood into the area.
Yeah. See, and that's where I was going, because if my back is stiff and I, you know, stretch, I warm it up, I do some light, you know, stiff leg deadlifts, then the soreness will dissipate.
Yeah. Or sit in a hot tub. That totally will take soreness out. Yeah.
Exactly. Naked.
what about cold then? I wonder about that, because I mean, cold initially you're chilling the muscle and everything down, but it, in effect, you're then flushing blood in afterward to heat it back up.
Well, the hot cold thing, like for you know, injuries and stuff, is the cold is to reduce swelling and inflammation, and the hot brings the blood back in.
Yeah. Well, I know cold on its own will bring blood in too. You know.
Well, it will after
it warms back up.
The cold, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's actually reducing it
at that time. Yeah, right.
While you're using it, exactly. Yeah,
right.
That's why when you're freezing to death, it turns white, your skin.
Yeah,
if you're white.
But then if you go back in the house, you know, after you're shoveling, then it turns bright red.
Yeah, because it's getting flush with blood.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a tan, so I don't know.
Right. Just constantly brown.
Basically.
I saw a lot of melanotin.
Your brown shades change.
I think I saw a lot of melanotin use this weekend, by the way.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And I saw the girls dancing at the Bang energy drink stand. That they figured it out, man. I mean, Bang has it figured out. All these companies that are hiring, you know, Phil Heath or whoever else to come and sit at their booth for a couple hours, you know, they're paying the big bucks for that, where they take all these, they get all these hot girls and they probably just can pick them straight off Instagram and put them into like scanty little clothes, you know, that are basically next to nothing, then get them up on a stage and start dancing. And there is like 1,000 people just standing there staring.
Did you say scampy clothes?
Well, I was going to say scantily clad, and then I just cut it off to scanty. I don't know if that's a word.
Okay, you went with a T. You went with T. I didn't know if you were talking about like scampy with a P, and I was thinking, I don't know if that was right.
Yeah, I don't know if scanty on its own is, or scantily clad, though. It seems like it does work, right?
I know scant and scantily.
Yeah.
Now, that does not mean that scanty is not, but I'm tending to think no. Yeah, exactly. Skankily.
Skankily. Yeah, that's a better one, isn't it? Anyway, I don't even know how we got off on that tangent. Oh, yeah, melanotin. Next question here. This is about injectable L-carnitine. What part of the day would you suggest using it, pre-cardio or pre-workout? I know that this has been a topic that's been floating around. Skip, did you experiment with this stuff a while back?
I did.
Okay. I'm in the dark with this one still. I read about it. I've learned about it, but I still don't completely understand it, and I feel like it could be to my benefit down the road.
Here are my thoughts on it, and I'm wondering if Scott will back me up or if he's going to disagree. I can't figure out. First, I have used it with pretty good success. The downfall is, you know, the injections, they're kind of voluminous.
Whew, yeah.
So they kind of suck. At the same time.
Wait a sec. It's voluminous. I want to give you some credit for that one.
Voluminous. Thank you.
Yeah.
Voluminous. At the same time, it's a very, very thin compound. So it's not like it goes in difficult. It's not like it knots the muscle. It's not like it's a sore, you know, I have PIP, stuff like that.
Yeah.
My question all along, though, was carnitine with a very low dose of insulin prior to cardio, I found very effective. What I can't figure out is whether it's actually the carnitine or if you could get the same effect from just the low dose insulin. And I really do think,
yeah,
this is my opinion, and I have not done it both ways. I have not done the injectable carnitine without insulin to compare it,
yeah,
because I find that the insulin, I believe and always have, that insulin pre-cardio can be very effective. And then come to find out, I guess Chris Aceto subscribes to the same thing. So it's always nice when someone, you know, who's well respected in the industry, that you think something or you're doing something and you're not sure, and then you hear someone else who you have a lot of respect for, or their knowledge and experience, is doing something similar. So I really can't be sure that it's the carnitine. Okay. It may just be the insulin. I can tell you that. Yeah, lowering, making sure the blood sugar levels, which is funny because that alone, low blood sugar levels, when you're doing cardio, you know, cuts to whether fasted cardio is more effective than non-fasted cardio. And I always have believed, and I will, there's just been, I've debated it and thought about it and looked into it for so long that I still believe, and I will always believe, that fasted cardio is more effective. I understand there are studies that show that it isn't. There are studies that show that it is. From a practical application, though, I really believe that it's more effective. And I also think that when you put it on paper, it seems very logical as well. So insulin, you small dose. I mean, we're talking, you know, a couple IU of insulin, unless you're just incredibly depleted and, you know, you haven't loaded in a while, that sort of thing, then I think it's very effective. If you're already depleted and you haven't loaded and you're running on nothing, you're asking for trouble. It's two things. It's twofold. You're asking for trouble because you can go hypo, but there comes a point where having low blood sugar levels or aren't going to be any better than having ridiculously low blood. It's just so that they're not high, so that they're not elevated. So I personally think that it's more the insulin than the carnitine. I can't say for sure because I haven't done it both ways. I'll just say that the use of insulin, low dose insulin with carnitine, I have found to be very effective for me. And I did notice a difference, and with clients as well.
How long did you use a protocol like that for?
I used it last year during the prep that I had to abort. So I'm guessing I probably did it for about 2.5 months.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't do it right out of the gates. I did it when I got further into my prep. And I say further, probably only a month or two, maybe 2 months. But I did. I thought that the effect was noticeable.
So is the dosing that we often see, is that like 200 milligrams a milliliter and you're looking for about 600 milligrams?
Yeah, I think too, it's supposed to go off of body weight. Okay. I know I went only with, let's see, I was doing double cardio and I was going only about 400.
Okay.
Twice a day. And I say twice only. I say only because there are plenty of people who go higher than that. And some people will advocate for, you know, much higher dosing than that. But I found it to be effective at 400 twice a day. And some may say, well, it was a double cardio or what. But I've done double cardio before. I mean, I've prepped and dieted enough over the years to be able to make what I feel is a pretty good, you know, comparison to where I noticed that it worked.
That's cool to hear. I got a question for Scott on this. Scott, why is it then, because that's the pain in the ass to me, is the fact that we see so much of the stuff that's dosed at 200 milligrams a milliliter, and I'm thinking, man, I'm going to have to, you know, this is a very, how do you say that word, Skip?
Voluminous.
Voluminous. I almost said voluminous, and I knew that wasn't right. This is a very voluminous shot, Scott. Is it like your test sip that you can only put so much into, you know, a given amount of liquid?
I'm going to be real honest. I missed the first part of what you asked him.
Injectable L-carnitine. Could we make it where it's just like 500 milligrams a milliliter?
I won't suspend.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard of people that have been trying to do that. I feel like that would be a gold mine if you could, right?
Yeah, that stuff hurts enough as it is.
Does it? Did you get pain from that, Scott or Skip? Now we don't have
that. Skip. Was swallowing. I know. I was swallowing water. I did not anticipate a question.
Sorry. I'm really into this.
I got no pain.
No pain.
Okay. I got no pain. No.
But maybe if it was a higher, you know, concentration.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Definitely could be.
How about you, Scott? Any thoughts on this one? And have you experimented with it on your own?
Yeah. I didn't get anything out of it.
Okay.
Other than it felt like I was getting stung by bees every time.
That fun. So John Meadows talked a little bit about this actually at a seminar, and that's one of the things that kind of got me excited to think about it again.
It has its place, but okay. I mean, for me, it didn't.
Yeah, no,
I mean, I think if you're super depleted too.
Yeah.
It definitely has a place in there. It has a place in certain scenarios. But no, go. What did John say? Go
ahead. Oh, he was just saying, he had heard of a lot of people that did like to use it pre-cardio, like you favor it, Scott, or Skip. I'm getting all confused here. I'm getting too excited.
Did you just call me?
It gives you
some energy, too.
So, oh, it does?
Yeah, because most of the time I'll take this back. Most of the time it's with B12, too.
Okay.
So, it gives you a little lift.
So, unlike
I didn't Skip, notice it, to be honest with you.
No?
No, I expected it, and I was looking for it, but I honestly really didn't notice it.
Hmm. Well, unlike
that's Skip, just me though. John other people likes, have reported that
John likes to use it pre-workout. He said he's never done it the pre-cardio method. He said there are tons of people that have reported that it works really well. Which Skip, it sounds like you've had some awesome success with it. He's always done the pre-workout method. What is it pre-workout that guys are looking for? Are they getting better pumps then, or what's going on?
Good question. If that's aimed at me, I'm not real sure. I had not used a pre-workout. I don't even know if I had heard people using it.
It should increase fat loss. What's the word I'm looking for? Starts with an L.
Lipolysis?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to increase that.
Okay, so you wouldn't necessarily feel it while you were training then.
No, and then there's some people that say you can get sight loss from it.
No, really? Trust,
that doesn't work. Whew. I can tell you that right now.
Wait, you can get what? Sight what?
You can get sight-specific fat loss because it breaks down the fat, allegedly.
But it's an IM shot. I mean.
No, you sub-Q it.
Yeah.
Believe me, it doesn't work. So anybody listening, don't try it.
Yeah. And on that note, too, the idea of insulin, you know, pre-cardio and all that, and especially someone who's even fasted, you know, we are talking theoretically only, just like the intro of the show says, kids don't try this at home.
Yeah, and not deep into your, you know, real deep into your prep when you're depleted. I mean, a lot of people struggle, maybe not a lot, but some people struggle with cardio and hypo anyway, deep into their prep. So to add, you know, the average person can handle a couple IU of insulin with, you know, when they're fasted anyway. But when you combine being very depleted with fasted with 30 or 40 minutes into an hour long cardio session, you have to be careful. You can hit the floor.
Yep. So
basically, if I'm eating pizza like the night before, I'm clear to do cardio fasted with a couple units the next day.
Well, yeah, honestly, I have clients and myself sometimes use insulin by itself for the first couple fasted cardio sessions of the week after a skip load.
Oh, I could see that. That makes sense. Yeah. We're talking minuscule dosing, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Minuscule. Absolutely. Couple units, that's it.
Yeah. I thought we were talking about L-carnitine.
We were, but I think we got to insulin only because, I can't say for sure that the carnitine itself by itself would have had the same effect without the insulin dosing. And, you know, like I said, I've run insulin pre-cardio by itself, and I haven't run it long enough to be able to determine whether it was equally as effective. And people might say, well, then why don't you do that? Because I like to experiment. That's true. But when I have something like this and I'm in a prep and I already know it's going to work with the carnitine, then I don't know if I want to take 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks to try to figure out during a prep if something is going to be equally as effective when I already know that combining the two is effective. I just can't be sure if it's, you know, related entirely to the carnitine or entirely to the insulin or in part for both.
I think the carnitine is a small, very small helper. That'd be the best way to put it.
Yeah. And that's my best guess as well. I really think that the insulin gets more credit or should get more credit.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good enough. That's a lot of great information.
It's like, what's that other thing people always used to take that's not worth a shit? It's an acronym. CLA.
That's CLA? Worthless.
Yeah. I think that's a ginormous waste of money right there.
Mm-hmm. One last question I have on this topic. For anybody who was doing, I don't know, TRT bodybuilding, would that fit into their protocol right now?
It could, hypothetically.
Hypothetically, okay.
Yeah, no, it definitely, yeah, and it is. The thing is I'm not doing cardio right now.
Oh, that's right. So you wouldn't go that right.
Once I'm depleted, then I'll get in there. Right now I'm progressing so well out of the gate that other people are different and they may not see it the same way, but I minimize, volume of work as much as possible. Sure. And I only add in more work when I need to, especially because I'm training more frequently and I'm pushing to get depleted. Right now I'm more high volume and a little bit more frequent. So I'm just letting it run right now, especially because it's only been, you know, about a week and a half or a little over a week. So it'll come in, but I don't know when it does, then, the insulin will be in there. Again, small dose, but it'll be in there.
TRT bodybuilding is like first and third world countries. You have a first world TRT and a third world version.
Yeah, I always say it's like natural bodybuilding. There's so many definitions, but I define TRT bodybuilding, and I've been pretty, you know, clear and pretty consistent with this. My own definition is just TRT when it comes to AAS. I'd throw growth hormone in there too, because I don't use growth. I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my definition really has to do only with AAS. And that means that blood levels to me are 1200 or less. And that qualifies TRT as far as I'm concerned. But you're right. Depending on who you ask, they could have different definitions.
It's like being on HRT. There's a whole spectrum of things that could fall into that.
Right.
Sure. Skip, do you find with all, because you've had a lot of experience now with TRT bodybuilding, if you keep those levels up there at 1200, Do you feel like your recovery is any better if you were to have added in something else, or do you feel like that really is truly optimized at that point?
Well, I mean, in fairness, TRT is great, and it's my best case scenario right now to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that if I were to add compounds, that I would be better off visually. I'd be bigger.
Sure.
You know, recovery, I would imagine, but just overall look, I know I would look better. That's why it's always tempting. There, you know, I've been pretty honest, and I'll sit here and say the same thing again. There's not a time that I don't consider, man, I haven't cycled in, you know, 5 years. I could get away with a, you know, big cycle and, you know, just clean up my blood afterwards, and it yeah. probably would be kind of a low risk. You know, I'm not going to lie and say I haven't considered that. Even last prep, when I said that I went above and added EQ and Anavar, it was low dose, but I could see a difference that when I did that.
Okay. Yeah.
And it wasn't much.
And I'm not talking the visual difference, because I get that, but I was just wondering on the recovery.
Yeah. I mean, that one's, it's hard to gauge, but I would just say it would have to. Protein synthesis increasing, and yeah. it just has to. To what degree? I mean, that's like saying, can you overtrain on, you know, a cycle? Of course you can. Yeah. So, you know, it's just kind of, it has to increase recovery to some point. How much? It's anybody's guess. I don't know.
Yeah. My thought was, it's like, I was wondering, because I'm still thinking back to my question, you know, about my delayed onset muscle soreness and with recovery. And you know, I also am looking at the ideas of like, well, how long is a muscle sore? And then, you know, how long until I can get it trained again, that type of stuff. I just wonder if there's like a max, you know what I mean? Like you get to a point where it's like, you know, and I'm sure there is, you know, if you're on like, say, 1.5 grams a test, is your recovery going to be better at 2 grams? You probably already tapped it out. You know what I mean? You're probably like, as far as that aspect goes, you probably might look bigger on more gear, but you know, how much different is the recovery? And I'm just kind of thinking out loud here on it, just because.
I would agree with you, but yeah. I think when you get to that level, going from 1500 to 2000 is a lot different than going TRT to even doubling your TRT.
Yeah. So I wonder where that is. You know what I mean? I wonder what point it is where it's like, you know, well, this is about as good as you're going to be able to recover. Is that 500 right. milligrams? I'm sure it's different for everybody, you know, but
sure.
Still, so something I was thinking.
Hey, Skip, since you're in these latter years, like myself, has Cialis entered your TRT program?
Cialis has always been a component. Well, I say always, probably for 3 years. I take it daily. It helps to shave off 10 to 11 points from my blood pressure. Other people say, and I found this kind of odd. Other people have said that they take Cialis and their blood pressure increases. Hmm. Have you found that? That does not happen for me.
No, mine doesn't. No. It also helps with your prostate.
I just think overall, I think it's just a good. Are there any negatives, Scott? I don't.
That is one drug that I think we got a big thing on it way back sometime. We talked about. It's one of the only ones out there that has like no negatives, unless you getting hard a negative to you. I mean, it really has. They have never found anything negative. No, it doesn't have the 45 lists of vomiting, nausea, you know, toenails growing 5 inches a day, whatever, you know, all the side warnings they give with everything else. It's pretty much, you know, good to go.
That would make sense. Then
I think a lot of people, too, when it comes to Cialis, they think, oh, it increases erections, so that's why I take it. But, you know, there's another side effect sexually that doesn't usually get much airtime when it comes to Cialis, and that is, and I've had numerous clients report this back to me, and this might be TMI, but Cialis also makes you, and I don't know how to dumb this down or soften this up, but literally will make you come harder.
Yeah.
And I don't mean harder, like more difficult, but like, you know, a 12 on a scale of 1 to 10 instead of a 7 or an 8.
Well, yeah, because it's a vasodilator and it's pushing more blood down there. So it's pushing, it gets everything moving.
But yeah. I just think a lot of people don't talk about that, or they don't, I don't know if they don't know or if they just don't talk about it, but it's not something, usually when you talk about Cialis and sexual performance, it's just, oh yeah, I have harder erection and yeah, that's awesome. I don't even know if I've heard people talk about that component before.
Oh, wait, hold on a second, guys.
He's taking his Cialis.
No, I just had to place an order.
I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? He's got to respond to a client. I don't know what he's doing.
No, I need to place an order stat. No, you know what? I got a side effect from Cialis because I tried to use it for blood pressure. And, I, you know, it's been like 4 years since I did that, so I can't remember what the dosing was. But, you know, I did all my diligent research, and by that, I mean I went on the message boards and I talked to all the bros. I remember it was a smaller dose than you normally would use for erectile stuff. But after about 3-4 days, I started getting killer headaches.
Yeah, it's really? Your sinus cavity.
Yeah?
Yeah, you just got to take some Sudafed or some kind of like one of those... one of those type of over the counter supplements prior to taking it. It basically does the opposite. It makes you have acts like your sinuses are flaring up and everything. Viagra will do it to you way worse than Cialis. So you just take some Sudafed or some kind of similar type of over the counter before you take it. Then you won't get a headache.
And I don't have that problem because I take Benadryl every night and Zyrtec when I wake up.
Okay. That must be it then. I'm, down the road, I might look at that. I've been on the lisinopril again, and I'm finding that to be really good. I like it for blood pressure.
Yeah, I'm back on it too.
Yeah? That's working for you now, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude, speaking of, it was the lisinopril that gave you, was it angioedema?
Is
that
yeah, it wasn't, though.
No?
Well, it did. Yeah. It manifested when I took it out, statistically, and the doctors, after I did research on it, said, yeah, that's what causes it, because the large majority of trips to the ER for people with angioedema are on lisinopril. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, that's it. And I took it out. But about 4 weeks later, I got it again without the lisinopril.
Oh, I think we did talk about that.
Yeah, and it wasn't angioedema technically. Okay. My training partner, chiropractor, awesome guy. Well, Dr. Jake. Oh, yeah. We got to have him back on, too.
Let's talk about next week. I'm going to see if he's available next show.
I definitely will. Yeah, right. I would love to have him back on. I haven't spoken with him much since I moved, so that'd be cool. But he made it clear to me it's not technically angioedema. It's an anaphylactic shot or an anaphylactic reaction.
Oh.
Yeah. So I could, and I still, to this day, I don't know what it is. So now what I do, because it has happened a couple times since then, maybe like 3 or 4 times. So now I just take Benadryl when I go to bed and I take Zyrtec when I wake up, and I do not have any problems ever.
So I saw a TV show. It was called like Real Stories of the ER. There was a woman that was on lisinopril, thought of you, Skip. Her tongue swelled up. It got bad, and they had to get like a breathing tube down her throat before it blocked off her airway.
Yeah, Dan, I'm telling you, being intubated, I've never been, but I don't want to because that doesn't look like fun.
No.
I want to say, I went brain dead. What it causes is blood vessels in your sinuses to expand. That's why you get a headache.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a killer headache, too. Like, I'm talking migraine level. And it took me a little while. Yeah, it took me a little while to figure it out, you know. Smart me, I'm taking something new, but I don't necessarily tie that together immediately. I'm just thinking like, oh, maybe I'm not getting enough water today. That's probably it. And I deal with it for like another, you know, 40 hours before it finally comes to me. Oh, maybe it's the Cialis.
Yep.
All right. I'll go back to that question that they talked a little bit about calf training. He says, overall, I have decent leg development through the quads and hamstrings. Glutes, adductors, and calves seem to be lagging behind. I do all the basic lifts you'd think of in bodybuilding. I squat almost every workout. Leg press, hack squats at times, plus curls and extensions. What do you suggest I do differently or in addition to bring up my weaknesses that don't seem to be responding well. And how do you guys train calves?
Calves? So
I know. That's what I wasn't clear on either.
What's that?
Well, you said calves, but it sounds like he's also asking about glutes.
And adductors. So here's what I get what he's saying. It sounds like, here's my thought. Maybe he's been doing this for a few years, okay? And, you know, I think about it, and I think about, like, okay, I'm doing my standard split. You know, I probably train once, every body part once a week. And then a couple years in, I'm like, okay, well, my back looks bigger, but my chest didn't. You know what I mean? It's like, well, my chest training isn't necessarily working for me. What could I specifically do? In this case, it looks like, I mean, he's doing everything that a bro, you know, would do in the gym for training legs. He's squatting. He's leg pressing. He's doing hack squats. He's doing...
That's time. That's what it is. Here's an example. People with a weak upper chest want to know specifically what to do with weak upper chest. And what it is time and building muscle tissue in the chest. When it's the same thing with legs. When you train legs, you're not going to all of a sudden get awesome glutes and adductors. Yeah. You have to first get awesome quads, and then the more they fill out and the bigger you get and the stronger you get, then that kind of spills over into adductor size and glute size. You can see it with the older bodybuilders. I used to have this tiny little 9-year-old ass for the first, 8 years that I competed, and then all of a sudden, over time, then, and it may be age related too, who knows, but glutes started getting bigger, not necessarily adductors, probably because that was about the time where I started having all my back problems and could not continue to train legs as hard. But you know, adductors, I've always said it again, it's kind of analogous to upper chest. The larger your legs get, the larger your adductors will get. Now there's a point where, you know, if genetically you're not prone to have big or thick adductor development, that's possible too. It sucks, but yeah, you can even see it. You know, Dusty Henshaw is a good example. His legs have not always been his, you know, a dominating muscle group for him, but the bigger they've gotten, the better his adductors have gotten too, and his glutes. So that's I think it's just time. It's again, just building tissue, and then it just kind of spills over, much like the chest, where I don't even know if you really have to do. I think incline work is not necessarily mandatory. It's a good idea. I just think that if you didn't focus on incline work and make it a priority, you would still build upper pec tissue.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't be to the degree that, you know, incline work would build tissue.
I'm totally with you on that, 100%. That's the advice I give to people on chest too, is just build more chest.
And I think adductor and abductor work is still a good idea, like, you know, your innies and outies. Yeah. I have a client, God love her, she calls the adductor abductor work good girl, bad girl.
Yes,
and I'm like, what the hell is, no kidding, I had never heard that.
That's funny.
And I asked her, I'm like, what the hell, this is like last week, what the hell is good girl, bad girl? And then she laughed. She explained. I'm like, I have never before heard that reference.
That's funny.
I think every gym should take their adductor and abductor machines and not face the wall. They should face directly to the open part of the gym. That way all the creepy guys get a free shot.
I go out of my way to look away if I'm like, my eyes are like scanning across the gym and there's like a girl in front of me on the adductor or abductor machine, I just instantly like avert quickly.
And you know, they're looking, like, if you look at them and you look in their eyes, they're looking dead in your eyes. Like, I know you're going to look.
Right. Right.
You're like, I'm not looking.
I looked.
Yeah.
Oh, look.
Where are you, Scotty?
I would say for his hams and glutes and everything, is because it sounds like he's doing mostly pressing movements for his legs, you know, squats, leg sled. Just put a barbell on your back, do walking lunges with long steps.
Walking lunges, those are good, huh?
Yep. And also when he's doing ham curls, don't curl it all the way up to your rear end. Stop about halfway. Yep.
Okay.
No, don't curl it all the way up.
What's that going to do differently?
What's that? More tension on the muscle.
Okay, but he wants to. He says he wants more glutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, he said he did ham curls. So I was saying lunges. Okay. Just they do barbell lunges, walking lunges with really long strides.
That's a good one.
And then for the calves, if somebody has calves, are kind of genetic in a way, but I do it two ways. Okay, if you're on your feet all day long for your work, then you want to do calf raises, whatever, high repetitions, but you got to make sure you got full stretch top to bottom. And then if you sit on your rear end all day long, drop the rep range down, add the weight some more, but still make sure. A lot of people, you know, you see them on calf machines and they do these little short little jumpy little calf raises. You need to stretch it all the way down, peak it at the top.
Hmm. Yeah, calves are a little bit different in that sense because they're used to thousands of reps every day in that mid range, not full stretch, not full contraction. Mm. So I completely agree. You have to hit that muscle that is constantly used, probably damn near more than any other muscle during the day. That's why fat people have such massive calves, because they have to move that body mass around every day for thousands of reps. Hmm. If you can get into that stretch position that the calf is not used to being in, and I agree with the contracted position too, but I would almost say that the stretch position is even more important. That's where you're going to get a stimulus that those calves aren't used to.
Hmm. Yeah, and then just the rep range part compared to your whatever your daily life is. If you're an IT guy at a desk, then you want to go with, you know, probably less, lower reps, more weight. And then if you're on your feet all day long, retail worker, whatever, you want to go with higher reps, less weight. Hmm. Like 50 reps a set.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, to the point where I've said in the past, I don't even know if counting reps is all that important. You just go until you cannot. Yeah, you just go until you cannot tolerate the pain anymore.
Yeah,
and then shake them out. Keep the weight on your shoulders. Shake them out one at a time to get some blood in, and keep going.
No kidding. That sounds painful right now.
It is. Yeah.
is that what you did, Skip, to grow your calves? You mentioned before that you know over time you developed a decent set, but it took a while.
Yeah, you know, and I can't figure out the genetic component, because obviously I wouldn't have good calves, I guess, if there wasn't a genetic component. But if I didn't kill them I probably had to kill them for 10 years. I mean, this is a very difficult muscle group for me to develop. And it was funny because I laugh and say it took so long to get them that by the time I got them, it didn't matter anymore from a competitive standpoint. Mm. You know, back when I first started, you had to have calves. You could have a good physique and lose a show without calves. Ask Tony Pearson. Mm. But yet these days, you just don't need them. They don't carry the weight that they did. Now, most of us want them because they look badass and it balances out a physique, and I get that. But it took me a long time, and I had to just destroy them. Two things that I did that I think helped, and it took a long time, but one was I just pounded the shit out of them frequently. I mean, I would train calves 2, 3, 4 times a week because I think they recover relatively quickly. The other thing is I would split up gastroc and soleus work on different days. I almost trained them as separate muscles. So I would do standing calf raises, donkey calf raises, and then the next day I would come in and train just seated calf raises. But I was always a big proponent from the start of not to go heavy, but to get full stretch, full squeeze. I don't know how many times people would say to me over the years, especially when I was younger, well, you're not even using any weight. How do you expect your calves to grow? And I would love to have 12 or 10 years later come back around and seen what their calf development was versus mine. Because the strides, and I don't have these incredibly awesome calves. What I have is I had nothing. I had shitty calves to start, and no one would have guessed. I would never have guessed that my calves would have turned out even close to what they are now.
Well, there's more slow twitch fibers in your calves too.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Yeah. For the long haul, because you have to use them all the time. I can see that. That makes sense.
I never really had too much problem with calves, but you know, I think a lot of people that play sports, a lot of sports when they're young, tend to have better calves.
Man, I caught for years and I did not come out with awesome legs or these overwhelmingly big legs or calves.
You think you would develop something.
Your knees though.
What's that?
you're probably on your knees most of the time.
Yeah, I see where you're going. It took me a second, but I see where you're going. No, I was actually, and I'm still, you know, when my son started squatting and one of my daughter, or catching, and one of my daughters caught, I would tell them flat out, I don't care what your coach tells you, you're not using those lazy ass pads on the back of your
knee savers.
You'll develop strength. And they will save your knees if you're lazy and you sit up on your, you know, the balls of your feet. And that's not a great position for your knees to be in, but that's not how you're supposed to, that's not the position you're supposed to take anyway. That's just being lazy. You'll develop as a catcher, if you have kids who catch, you'll develop better lower body strength if you don't let them use those crutches and you get them
in the correct position. I disagree.
Why do you disagree?
Well, because it depends on how big you are. I mean, when kids get to a certain weight. My stepson, he squatted 600 pounds when he was 16. He was a catcher. He wore knee savers because he weighed 245-50 pounds.
Okay, well, there's obviously exceptions. But I would even go so far as to say this, and I want to clarify this too, because this is important. It also depends on how you use them. And a lot of these kids are putting them up too high on their legs, and that can help to actually, or I say help, it will actually be put their knees in a vulnerable position by leveraging the knee. If you have them back a long way and they're sitting, let's say, and I can't.
They should be below your calf.
They should be below your calf, exactly. But even then, you can be on your knees. You can't. But when you're in position behind the plate, you shouldn't be resting in your lowest position. You should be in a low squat.
Yeah. Well, if you have them in the right place, it doesn't matter.
I just wanted to see if you'd argue. I mean,
I didn't spend that much time on my knees. I played outfield.
I think you were on your knees more than you admit.
Back to the question, I got one more that I want to ask. What about foot positioning on squats? Could that improve adductors too? Or even leg press foot positioning?
What do you think, Scott? Yeah, is it really a big deal? Because I don't think it's a huge. Can it help? Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go dramatically wide with your, but I don't know. I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference. If you squat with a wide stance and your toes are pointed out, I guess. If you're just the difference between a narrow or not a narrow but a shoulder width stance and say 2 or 3 inch difference. With width, I don't think that's going to matter. I think it has to be pretty dramatic. Would you agree or no?
Yeah, or you can take your heels fairly close together and point your toes your way out. But what are you doing? You're doing, you know, a leg sled for your abductors. I mean, just go to the little machine you're not supposed to face to the crowd with. Mm. You know, so, I mean, I think it's kind of a, you know, there's ways to hit your adductors well, squatting or leg or doing a leg sled, but then to get in that position, you're kind of defeating the purpose of everything else. You're not really getting anything else. So why do it? Just go. I tell you, if you lunge long stepping barbell lunges, you'll get good adductors.
That sounds. Yeah, I'm sure.
And glutes and all that.
The reason I asked that, I was thinking about it when I first got some good development on my quads, because I had always, the way I had squatted, it was all going into like the glutes and hams and hips, a lot of hips in my squat. And then I retrained myself. And when I did, I trained myself to squat with a real close stance. And when I did that, my quads got really good, but then it was really shallow inside. And that's because my feet were very close together, I think. Once I did go more to shoulder width, at least, then I felt like I was at least kind of developing it more evenly. But I don't know. That's, I guess everybody's different, you know, but that's what I saw first. It could have been, Skip, that it was just that that's what came first. Like you're saying, the amount of time I had developing the muscle.
Yeah. And I don't go inside shoulder width usually.
Yeah.
It may be because of my lower back, because I think in my younger years, I was probably pretty narrow. I mean, I bought into the inside outside, you know, knees closer together, feet closer together, you know, get more sweep, that sort of thing. I think a lot of these things might matter in small percentages, but even when it comes to calves, calves is a good example. You know, I got the question over the years, you know, toes inside or heels kicked out versus hit the outer head. And, you know, I always told people, and I still believe this, you just need to bomb the shit out of them straight away and they'll fill out, they'll grow. And I think when people get too specific too early and they start playing with foot position too early, you know, toes in, toes out, you don't have the calf strength and you don't have the calf development to be able to start to be that specific yet. I don't think it's as much of a benefit. Once you get the size and then you want to play around with different areas and try to target subtly different areas, you know, if you got pretty good quads and you're going to try to hit the outer sweep, but that makes sense. But when you don't have much quad to begin with and you're talking about outer sweep, you just need size. And I think that these small, subtle things do more to complicate what you're doing than to actually add benefit.
I see. I think you're right. That makes sense. I'm going to move on, guys. This question is something I bet both of you guys will have some good input on this one. What is better for keeping hemoglobin levels low? Donating whole blood every 56 days or donating power red, double red donations every 112 days?
Whole. Don't ever donate double.
Yeah. Skip?
You know, I don't know, and I'll tell you why. I'm just being transparent here. I was not able to donate for the last, I don't even know, 3 years or more because they wouldn't let me. Yeah, pretty much ostracized.
Yeah.
But yeah, it. I don't know. I haven't looked into it much. I've actually been looking into it recently of phlebotomizing myself. And I had a guy that reached out to me, and obviously, you know, I won't mention his name, but I really appreciated it. He just broke down. He's like, gave me links and everything else. This is what you get, vacuum tubes, everything else. It's actually quite easy to do. And I really appreciated that. The only thing now is because I'm in a different place, I may actually be able to go and have it done versus doing it myself. But I don't know the ins and outs of that because I haven't had to deal with it for quite a few years. So I can't say.
Are you going to use Scott's idea of getting like a 16-ounce Mountain Dew bottle to fill up?
Yeah, no, these vacuum tubes that are already pre-measured, I think they're 100 mil vacuum tubes, is definitely, you know, the way to go if I have to do it myself. And I will if I have to, because this would, it seems very easy. It seems very simple. And it seems safe. So.
Well, there's a reason behind it, because when you donate double platelet, they'll tell you not to do any physical exercise for 30 days. Because the problem is when you donate that and then you go and try to train, your body can't recover from that. And I know somebody that would felt like death for like 6 months after that. And, put it in the context of contest prep. Say you're just so depleted, you're just the worst ever. If you went and just pounded the weights after that nonstop, you'd never recover. You'd always be, you know, be compromised. No, don't ever do doubles unless you don't work out. Just, you know, have no real exercise in your lifestyle.
He had a second part, just asking, secondly, is there any loss of testosterone levels when you donate blood?
If you're on exogenous testosterone?
He doesn't specify.
If you're on exogenous, there's got to be some, but I wouldn't think it was. I mean, that's kind of. I guess if you pin like 30 minutes before you went and gave blood, yeah, or the same day, but I mean, there wouldn't be much.
Okay. Got just a couple more here, guys. What are your thoughts on fruit in the off-season diet and contest prep? Are there any points that fruit can actually improve results in bodybuilding? Skip, do you write any diets for people and specifically say eat fruit?
That's funny because I just wrote and submitted an article called The Great Fructose Debate and how it relates to carb loading. And I just submitted it last night. It'll be out in a couple weeks on Elite FTS.
Skip, Scott actually had hacked into your email account and that's where this question came from. We actually already,
apparently,
he already released that. He sold it to Muscular Development.
Well, I'll say this. I do think that fructose does play a part. but I'm going to skate out a little bit on it because I don't want to give it all away before the article comes out or Elite might not be too overly pleased. But I think it does play a part. I don't put people on fruit. I've done it in the past. I got ready for a show in 2003 and my loading protocol was strictly fruit.
Okay.
So I'll say this, the debate in the article that I touch on, which I, you know, the fructose debate, is whether fructose is used only by the body to replenish liver glycogen, or if the muscles can use fructose to replenish, I'm going to cough, excuse me, to also replenish skeletal muscle glycogen.
Hmm.
And I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
But it does play a part. It is a part of, it should be a part of carb loading.
All right, cool.
Just Google the watermelon diet.
The what diet?
The watermelon diet.
What is that?
Well, I mean, fruit's a pretty general term.
Yeah.
It encompasses a lot. Yes, using melons, especially watermelon.
Yeah.
Can be very and very effective.
Okay.
But you got to be careful because if you start mixing a lot of melons and you have other kind of carb sources, complex sources in there, then it could backfire on you.
Okay. What, why is that? Why would it backfire? Like I'm not sure I understand. Well,
cause you're getting a fast and a slow acting carbohydrate. So you can kind of overdo it.
Okay.
But water, I've done the watermelon diet or the melon diet. Hmm. Yeah, but plus it's got good hydration.
So you're just going to switch all your carbs to that? Or you mean just when you eat like one specific meal, you just use melon?
I eat all melons and some blueberries.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Did you get my coughing fit there on the...
It was in the background. Just hit your mute button next time.
I did, actually.
Did you? Oh, wow. We got the beginning of it then. You okay?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, okay. My eyes are watering. I think I pooped a little. No. No. That part I'm kidding about.
All right.
But you got to be careful with, just people say fruit and they just think fruit. You know, there's a lot of different kinds of fruit and what they contain.
And sucrose, you know, being partially fructose as well. Table sugar has a fructose component. And I've been surprised to realize that not a lot of people know that.
Hmm. So, well, I don't want to ask too many more questions because I don't want to dig into what the article could be about. So
I know, and I feel bad.
We'll leave it at that for now.
Talking about it.
Can we revisit this one down the road?
Yes, absolutely. It's just the timing. I was like, aw.
All right. Yeah, because it could be fun to talk about because I've heard various things, and I think we could tie honey into that. That could be part of the topic as far as fructose goes. And how do you pronounce it? Is it fructose? That's the way
I've always called it fructose. How about you, Scott?
I just call it melons.
I'm going to start saying fructose and just say it with a straight face.
Well, you know, there's a certain kind of diet that you take that you have to take all melons and that kind of fruit in, or you end up on your back with your legs in the air and your ankles all swollen.
Nice. Well played.
That's immediately what I was thinking about when you started talking about the all melon diet.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either. I think we have one more. Just a simple short question. Probably could go deep, but you guys are willing to, you know, take it as far as you want. How often do you take a working set to failure?
I don't do a set.
Never lately.
Yeah, there you go. I don't do a working set if it's not to failure.
Okay.
And when I say failure, let me say this, just to clarify. If I get a rep and I know I'm not going to get another rep, then I consider that failure. I know some people say, you don't know. You're limiting yourself with your mind because you don't know. I've been training for 34 years, motherfucker. I know if I can get another rep or not.
Yeah.
Or if I'm going to come out. Plus, I train by myself. Actually, I train with my wife. But lately, that basically means I'm training by myself. So it's just I know what that point is. And I just don't believe that if you're doing working sets that you should stop. I see some guys. I'm not going to bash them because, you know, a lot of them are bigger than I am. But when I see someone big and strong squatting you know, $5.95 or $4.95 for 10 reps, and they stop, and they're like, oh, you know, that was just, you had four or five more in you. Why did you stop? That, those types of things I don't understand. I understand maybe they're going heavier. That's great. I don't know what they consider, you know, working sets versus non. I'm sure they have their recovery down and they know what they're doing. I just personally can't go at a working set or consider it a working set if it's not balls out.
All right. Historically, Scott, how about you?
I mean, I think it kind of... Yeah, I mean, I would think it would kind of, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do, because there's, you know, different methods of training. But I would say in general, yeah, I would probably go till, I won't say the last, well, I train alone too, so obviously if I'm bench pressing, I'm not going to go past what maybe I can't get off my chest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would say I'd push it pretty hard. With good form, I mean, there's, you know, do you go to the working set to failure with proper form? Let's say rope push downs, or are you getting an extra 3 or 4 reps in and you look like you're fucking a donkey? You know,
I'll do the donkey move sometimes. I look at it this way, and I think it's along the lines of what Arnold used to say. If you get all the reps you can and with good form, but you can still get a couple more that are either momentum based or a little bit, I say sloppy, I don't think it's a very good word, but if you can get a couple more reps, that's more of a stimulus than had you just stopped when you couldn't get any more with perfect form. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that I recommend going with, you know, shitty sloppy form and getting another 10 reps, but if I can get a couple extra reps, I'm big with partials too, especially when it comes to back. Mm. If I can't get full reps, I get 10 reps and they're pretty full, but I can get another 2 or 3 reps that are, you know, 3/4, and then maybe the last one is only a half rep. Yeah, you know, I feel that that's just an added stimulus versus just stopping the set when I can't finish another full rep.
Yeah, I mean, I would say as long as you can get, if you're going to get some self-help, as long as it's not something that's going to cause injury or just totally not even stimulating the muscle, you're just using total momentum or something like that.
Right, or the entire set is sloppy, or the entire set is partials or something. Yeah, I would completely agree with that.
Yeah, I think it varies on the lift, you know, what you're doing. You know, I mean, I like to do, the times I have trained with a partner, I like to do 4 reps with help, you know, to keep the form good, but then to push it past the failure point.
Right.
Right. Well, this is good stuff, guys. I think we covered a lot of material today. I'm back into my groove here. I like I said, I wasn't eating great while I was away, but it makes me feel glad to be home and be able to get back into, you know, making my food the way I want it and, you know, being in charge again of when I'm going to be eating it and all that. So that feels good. I'm happy to be getting back into that today. I'm looking forward to getting to the gym. Skip, it sounds like you're just cranking away at this point, man. What are you training today?
I got to hit back. I actually trained yesterday on a Sunday. It helps me when I don't load to train on the weekends.
Yeah.
Not because I'm, oh my God, I got to have my burgers, but because I have been so routine and consistent with, you know, I don't usually train on the weekends. That's family time and Sundays are load days. So this way it makes a Saturday and Sunday feel like it's just any other day of the week. And it works with my mind quite well. Plus I can ride my bike to the gym on the weekend.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'll head back today. I'll have a rest day on Thursday. I got some friends coming in. They leave for a cruise out of Fort Lauderdale, and they get in Friday night. They're from New York. Haven't seen them in a little while, so we'll do that. So it should be fun. Actually, my birthday's Friday.
Oh, no kidding.
It. Yeah.
Well, happy birthday. Old man.
Yep, 48.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
How about you, Scott? You got anything going on today?
I'm going to go try to buy my son a car, and I have a couple errands to run, and then today is 10-mile rock march day.
How long does something like that take you?
I can do about 13-minute miles.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if, you know, somewhere around 2 hours.
Okay.
A little bit less.
No thanks.
I'm driving 10 miles.
Right. Like yeah. Right. Exactly.
Oh, and it's humid as hell, so I'm going to be sweating like crazy. And then I do some body weight stuff, you know. Real exciting.
Right on. Well, guys.
I got a kettlebell.
You got a what?
A kettlebell.
What are you doing with that?
I don't know yet. I've got it. I just said I got it. I didn't use it.
Well, you can YouTube that. That's very popular. You'll find, I think, 100 different uses for it.
Yeah, I will.
Skip, do you ever work anything like that in? Any kind of what's your thoughts on functional strength?
My function every day is to work on the computer and ride my motorcycle. So no, I'm not big on function. In fact, I kind of mock the label because what are you training for? Pick up basketball? I mean, what do people really do? You have functional strength if you're training because you're a professional athlete. That might be a little different.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
You know, you're pretending. So when you're a professional athlete or you're training to be one, then you're kind of training, you know, sports specific and, you know, functional training. I think that the term or the label is overused and used more to justify, you know, different types of training. You know, I'll see people doing cable swings like it's a golf. That's not going to improve your golf game. What the hell is that all about? I wish people would just train more like bodybuilders like they used to instead of doing rope, you know, making the rope thing do
right
hills. And I don't know. Sometimes I just look and go, eh.
I'll tell you this, though. Take some kettlebells and do side raises with them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, something like that. But, I mean, let's be fair. Is it really any different? Do your side delts know that you're using a kettlebell? It's not much different, I don't think.
They're bigger than yours.
Good point. Touche.
I was setting you up there, Skip. I kind of had a feeling that was going to be your response.
Yeah, I'm predictable in that sense.
I got hot yoga class tonight at 8.
Oh, yeah? I don't believe that.
I don't either.
Well, hot yoga is the heat's on and I'm laying on the couch.
Okay.
Nice.
All right, guys. Well, let's get out of here. We're out of time for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill, S2H. I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you guys soon.
Out.
And jumped in the 6-4 with the diamond in the back, sun in the top. Digging the scene with the gangster lean, cause I'm the E. I don't slang or bang, I just smoke motherfuckers like it ain't no thing. And all you bitches, you know I'm talking to you.
We wanna fuck you, Easy.
I wanna fuck you too, because you see, I don't really take no shit.
So let me tell you motherfuckers who you fucking with.
Cause I'm the type of nigga that's built to last. If you fuck with me,
Advices Radio Network.